And welcome to episode one of the new Dr. Sky podcast. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to this unique podcast, the Dr. Sky brand, covering the realms of astronomy, space, aviation, and weather. And we welcome you to this very unique podcast. Let's begin, of course, with the month of October as we talk about astronomy. October is one of the more incredible months across the nation and around the world, because here in the Northern Hemisphere, there's usually a large area of high pressure, cooler weather that gives everybody out there the opportunity to go out and look at the beauty of the nighttime sky. But here in Arizona, where we of course have the Dr. Sky Show, our flagship radio station KTAR, that is KTAR News 92.3 FM, with the Dr. Sky Show, the month of October is a fascinating month to see what's in the sky. And let's begin with month number 10. October 2020 brings us an amazing surprise. The planet Mars comes closest to the Earth than it has in at least a few years. And on the evening hours of October the 6th, the planet Mars is only some 38 million miles away. With the naked eye, it's easy to see. It's one of the most brilliant objects in the night sky. It's actually the brightest object in the evening sky, other than the moon itself. Only the planet Venus is actually brighter, but that's a pre-dawn object in the east-northeast. But speaking about Mars, the red god of war, Arizona has a particular rich history with the planet Mars. The founding of the Lowell Observatory by Percival Lowell and his incredible observations over a period of about 25 years, where he thought he actually saw these lines and streaks on the surface of Mars, which he thought were canals. This, of course, came after some observations before him, the Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli. He thought that he observed these long linear features on the surface of Mars. And in Italian, canali means, of course, these rather long extended waterways, canals. We know today that Mars doesn't have the canals, but here's what's interesting about Mars for observers here in Arizona and around the world. In the Northern Hemisphere, as I mentioned before, Mars will be getting rather high in the sky. For observers in the Northern Hemisphere with telescopes, you'll be able to see some interesting details on the surface of the planet. For our more technical observers out there, the planet Mars will have a diameter of some 22 plus seconds of arc. What does that mean in Earth terms? It means that it's quite small to the naked eye, you can't see detail. But in a small telescope, you should be able to, at least with 150 to 200 times the magnification of the eye, you should indeed be able to see some surface features on Mars. Right now, the Martian southern polar cap is shrinking. But I went out the other night with a rather large telescope and observed Mars, and it was quite easy to see the southern polar cap. Other so-called land features on Mars, like Syrtis Major, and some of the other dark and dusky surface features are easy to view too. But before we continue, that is, here on the very special episode one of our Dr. Sky podcast, I wanted to talk in relative terms about binoculars and telescopes, and what, in my opinion, is probably the easiest way to get started in this particular subject and hobby or profession of astronomy. A pair of binoculars is probably the easiest way to get started in astronomy. Binoculars give you a wide view of the sky, as opposed to a telescope that gives you a much more focused and smaller area of the sky in which is magnified. Let's talk binoculars. If you hold a simple pair of binoculars, you'll see numbers on the very edge of the binoculars toward the side that you look into, and there'll be numbers. Let's say the binocular says 10 by 50. What does that mean? The left number means 10 times the magnification of the human eye, and the 50 is the diameter of the glass at the very front. That's measured in millimeters. And going back to basic school and science, 25.4 millimeters make up an inch. So if you had a 10 by 50 pair of binoculars, it's 10 times the magnification of your eye and a little, almost 2 inches or more of what we call objective lens on the outer edge of the binocular. Simply, the larger the amount of glass or the higher the millimeter, the more light gathering power. The higher the number of the left number, like the 10 of 10 by 50, means incredible magnification. But be careful. Sometimes you'll see binoculars that say 25 by 50. Well, that means 25 times the magnification of your eye with the same glass diameter. So that would be a little unwieldy to take a look at and hold steady because the magnification is pretty high. You'd probably need a tripod. So very simply, a pair of 7x50 or 10x50 binoculars are great for observing many of the things in our nighttime sky. And right now, what can you see with binoculars? You can look to the southern part of the sky just after sunset, and you'll get to see Jupiter. That's the big bright white object, now about 460 million miles away from your eye. And just a few degrees to the upper left, as you move through the zodiac, you'll come across the planet Saturn. If you hold a steady pair of binoculars, like 10x50s, and you look at the planet Jupiter, you might be able to recreate the experiment that Galileo did back on January 7th of the year 1610. On that particular evening, it's alleged that he observed three of the four Galilean satellites that are named in his honor, Io, Europa, and Ganymede. And on a successive night, he discovered an object called Callisto. These are all the many mistresses, and there are many more, of the great Zeus, the god of gods, Jupiter. It's quite interesting to see these. But in a telescope, you'll be able to see them with even greater detail. And many of these moons, the four basic Galilean satellites, will actually transit or eclipse across the big ball of Jupiter. And by the way, those of you with small telescopes, you'll be able to see some decent surface features on the cloud tops of Jupiter. Among those is the ever-shrinking but still visible so-called Great Red Spot. I've been observing for well over 50 years, and let me remind you, back in the 1970s, the Red Spot truly was great. What's happened to it, this massive cyclonic storm on the upper cloud tops of Jupiter, things have changed dramatically, but it's still visible. The planet Jupiter, then, of course, is an easy object to see, not only with the naked eye, but with binoculars and telescopes. Planet Saturn is also great. Don't expect to see the rings in a pair of binoculars. A small telescope with magnifications of at least about 100 to 150 times your eye will be able to reveal that beautiful, almost surreal-looking ring system. And I've shown this to many people, and if you're out there and you're experienced, you'll know that when you show people the rings of Saturn, they'll think that it's fake, like you have some sort of little 3D type of little computer-generated image in the telescope. But it is quite fascinating. And did you know that when Galileo observed Saturn, he thought he noticed two objects which he thought were large moons to the left and right of the main ball of Saturn? Simply, his telescope wasn't powerful enough to resolve what we now know is a fascinating ring system. Maybe a few hundred meters thick, maybe less, with objects the size of pebble, all the way up to maybe the size of an SUV, ice, dust, and particles making up the Saturnian ring system. But let's talk for a moment about telescopes, because so many people ask me, hey, Dr. Skye, what do I need to do to get started in astronomy? What's the best way? What's the best piece of equipment? So what I would recommend for listeners out there, after you progress from binoculars and learn how to use those, remember, binoculars give a wide view of the sky. Telescopes give a more focused view of objects that you like to see. A garden variety telescope is something which we call a Dobsonian design. It's a reflecting telescope, kind of simple, maybe crude, has a mirror at the very bottom, an open end at the top, and a diagonal in which you look and focus through an eyepiece of an actual image that you're looking at. Dobsonian telescopes are quite interesting. They're relatively inexpensive, as I mentioned, and you can purchase maybe a 6-inch or 8-inch Dobsonian telescope for probably $300 to $500. What it is a simple wood tube and a simple wood crate. So don't expect to be able to find objects with a computer. That's not what this is about. A Dobsonian telescope is great because it gives you the opportunity to teach yourself the wonders of the nighttime sky and simply find objects by moving in altitude and moving in azimuth, that is left and right around the compass. So Dobsonian telescopes are relatively inexpensive. They're reflecting telescopes. I recommend them wholeheartedly for beginners. The only negative, if there is one, and there's always something negative with something, but hopefully more positives in life. Dobsonian telescopes can be a little ungainly and a little unwieldy because they're large. And unless you have a small car or maybe a big SUV or a safe place to put it, you're going to have to carry the telescope in tubes. Some of these weigh upwards of about 50 or 60 pounds, but trust me, you'll be able to get a lot of mileage out of that. More advanced type telescopes are the types called refractors, meaning they have a piece of glass like a binocular would have at the other end and a long tube. And the larger the glass on a refractor, the more expensive it's going to be. So you can find decent refractors of about 2.5 to 3 inches with a tripod and a few basic eyepieces for probably $300 to $400. But when you move up to the larger refractors, the long tubes that have the clear glass at the very end, that is the observing end, not the eyepiece end, you may spend upwards of thousands of dollars. So what's the benefit of a refractor? The longer focal length is actually good for observers who are looking for planets. I have a beautiful Meade refracting telescope, which is 5 inches. The telescope tube is probably about almost five feet long, and it takes quite a while to set it up on the mount, but it's well worth it, folks. You know, if you're an observer with refractors, you do get some very crisp and beautiful images of planetary objects. The other type are the Cassegrainian type telescopes. These are the telescopes that are common from the days when Meade, of course, had a great series. And of course, Celestron today, like the C8 telescope. What is it? It's compacted optics, which have a piece of glass at the very front end. They also have a mirror. So what they're doing is they're shrinking the focal length down, giving you wider apertures at a more affordable price. And these type of telescopes usually require some serious setup, and they do have the capability to find and follow objects in what we call an electronic mode. You can actually plug it in if you balance the telescope right and set it up to the North Star, so on and so forth. You'll be able to track the many objects in the nighttime sky. This is good for more advanced observers and people who, of course, want to do some serious astrophotography. But wrapping up our skies for October, I think there's so many wonderful things to look at. And some of them are easy to see with the naked eye. And let's begin with some of the meteor showers that are taking place. From about October the 7th to about the 14th, if you look high up into the northwestern sky just after sunset, you will come across a constellation called Draco the Dragon. At the head of that dragon, if you look at a star chart, you'll be able to notice that from this particular area, during this period of time that I've talked about, a meteor shower known as the Draconids, often unpredictable, has sometimes produced some amazing early evening fireballs. So simply look up in the northwest after sunset, maybe all the way up till around 10 p.m. You never know what you'll get to see. But if you miss that, another great meteor shower is scheduled to take place by about October the 20th. It's known as the Orionids. And all the debris from these meteor showers are generally from comets or broken up asteroids. But this particular meteor shower, the Orionids, it's all debris from Comet Halley. And remember, Comet Halley throughout time has been referred to as mankind's comet. A great friend of ours here on the Dr. Sky Show, Guy Udwell, has written a phenomenal book, like a tabletop coffee table book, known as Halley, Mankind's Comet. A comet that we know comes around once every 76 years. And for observers that had, of course, the experience of a lifetime, maybe there's people out there that saw the comet back in 1910. I doubt that if they're still alive today. But truly, back in 1986, Comet Halley made a brief appearance, not spectacular as it was, but you'll probably have to wait till around the year 2061 to see it. But why wait that long? Because all you need to do is look into the eastern sky during the mornings of the morning of October the 20th, the 21st, and the 22nd. If you have clear skies, the beautiful constellation of Orion will be rising, and out of the left area, the armpit area of Orion, is where you will get to see many of these so-called shooting stars. Actually, they're not stars at all, but debris from comets, the tails of comets, some of which are as small as grains of beach sand and maybe up to some pebble or some small-sized rocks. Fascinating indeed. And don't forget, in the early morning sky, just before sunrise, we get to see the goddess of love and beauty, the planet Venus. And you know, it's interesting because now news reports are coming in that astronomers with radio telescopes have detected something called phosphine. And if you look at this rather noxious smelling gas, they're saying that, of course, phosphine is generated from some organic decay, a matter of such, meaning who knows, maybe in the cloud tops of Venus, one of the most unlikely places in the solar system, maybe life does exist in a very strange way, well up, miles up in the Venusian atmosphere. Because you know, on the surface of Venus, it's pretty inhospitable. When I say pretty inhospitable, it's hotter than hell. The temperature on the surface of Venus may be upwards of about 900 degrees Fahrenheit. An amazing story, ladies and gentlemen, but Venus, the goddess of love and beauty, shines so bright because of an incredible cloud system that's around the planet, and the greenhouse effect is in full effect on the planet Venus. The surface pressure on the surface of Venus, if you were to go there, and of course you don't want to, would be as if you dove down into the ocean about 3,000 feet, and you know that would be basically impossible unless you had the protection of a pressure suit. So Venus is a rather inhospitable world. As we wrap up October, don't forget, a full harvest moon was visible by the beginning of October, and then on Halloween night, we get to see the second of a full moon in a calendar month, sometimes referred to as a blue moon, depending on who you ask. Some define a true blue moon as the fourth moon, that is full moon, in a season. No matter what it is, we will experience a beautiful full moon on Halloween night, something that we haven't had since 1944 and won't have for a long time to come. Your questions and comments are welcome. Email me at drskyshow@gmail.com and check out our blog here at ktar.com, the Dr. Sky blog, talking about and with you, not at you, about the great realms of astronomy, space, aviation, and weather. And I'm privileged and honored to be here as your navigator on the highway to the heavens. As we always remind each and every one of you to always remember to keep your eyes to the skies, with great information here in one of the most beautiful locations in the entire world, and especially during October and November, as the monsoon will be long gone and those beautiful, clear, and crisp evenings. Yes, indeed, during the COVID crisis, it's time to get out and enjoy the beauty of the nighttime sky and share it with people, because there's something special, at least I believe, about the beauty and majesty of our nighttime skies. I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens, Steve Cates, Dr. Sky. Thank you for listening.